Welcome back to Next Stop. This is a special takeover of the TTT, Talking Transport Transformation, brought to you by TUMI, the Transformative Urban Mobility Initiative. And I am your host, Sanaa Khasaune, the Ambassador on Inclusion and Sustainable Transport. Today's episode is really special, and we have consulted you on our Instagram page and asked you about what topics do you want to hear more about in our show. And this is why today we are talking about mental health and transportation. Why is it important to talk about this topic? And this time we want to hear from not a transport expert, but a global health expert. This is why I have a very special guest with me. She is a young scholar. Her name is Shaima Rifat. She is a global health and development professional. She has graduated from King's College London and the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. Her work expands across not only global health, but policy development. She pays special attention to youth development and the empowerment of women. So this gave her the opportunity to work with governments and nonprofit organizations and many more. We are very excited to hear more from her about her work and how she perceives mental health within our cities. Welcome to Next Stop, Shaima.
Thank you, Sanaa. Thank you for the invitation and for the topic, because actually on a personal level, it's I've been thinking about it a lot and how transportation actually affecting my own mental health. So I'm really happy to be part of this episode.
Thank you so much. We are equally excited to start this conversation. Shaima, you may agree with me that we live in a wellness era. Young people today care so much about being in a good shape and being healthy, not only physically. I mean, we watch what we eat, not because we are watching our weights, but because we want to make sure that we are getting enough nutrients from our food. We also work out and exercise, and yoga and Pilates are on the trend right now among women all over the world. But we also care about mental health, and maybe this wasn't the thing with like the older generations, but us youth are talking more freely about mental health, you know, without any taboos or any shame around this topic. But whenever I say mental health, and I ask people to tell me what is the first thing that pops on their minds, they tell me therapy, anxiety, stress, ADHD, and not the actual state of being mentally healthy. So as a global health professional, how do you define mental health?
Okay, so by definition, we go by the WHO's definition. And actually, it makes much more sense for me, because as you mentioned, most of the people, when you say about mental health, they will say, okay, so we don't have any mental illness, so it's irrelevant to us. And actually, it's not, because it's beyond this. It's like, it's social, like to be in a good mental health. It means like it's a state of mental well-being. It's how you cope with stresses, how you communicate with the community, and to be like to engage. So it's actually, it's in each part of our activity. It's not only about illness or mental disorders. It's actually beyond this. And of course, for the old generation, they feel it the same. Like they don't think like, okay, so you actually, why you do pay too much attention to mental health? Hopefully, right, for now, especially after COVID, people are starting to get more attention to it. But it's, as you said, it's about our well-being. So it's not only about just disease and about how to get the medication, but it's how actually to live your life in a happy way and how to cope with stress, with most of us, not everyone, was actually, you know, being exposed to stress all over the day.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with you. And actually, when we talk about health in general, it's not the absence of disease, as you have confirmed. It's about being able to go on with our daily lives without needing support and without having any obstacles, whether they were physical obstacles or even mental obstacles. And talking about our daily routines, mobility is a huge part of our routine, right? Every day we wake up, we go to school, we go to work, we go to see someone, and we have to be within the transport system, within the mobility system. And that varies from one user to another, right? Like some people drive to go around, other people use public transport, and others walk and cycle. So where does mobility come into the picture when we talk about mental health, especially that it's part of our daily routines?
Okay, so mobility, if we look at the context of social determinants of mental health, maybe it's not a standalone determinant, but if you look at it, you will find it in all of them. For example, if we're talking about socioeconomic factors, so definitely it depends on your income, so which transportation you're going to decide. If we're talking about demographic and gender, so you're going to see a lot of different preferences for women and men, especially in using the transportation. And what I actually more attach to it for the education, for example, because during our work, we've seen a lot of students drop out of schools. And when we dig deep why the reason behind that, and we found it actually most of them were commuting, like it's either it's not safe to commute to schools or they don't have the transportation to go to it. So mobility is, as I said, it's in every, this actually it's one of the key decisions you take every day. Like you wake up and you say, okay, I'm going to go to school or work. So what I'm going to, I'll go by car. Do I go with public transportation? So, and then you will see a lot of factors that you, in your decision, like, is it safe? Is it fast? Is it clean? Is it reliable? And that's most important now in this hectic time. So mobility, as I said, maybe it's not a standalone, but it's actually, it's cross-cutting with all the determinants. So it's a huge, and that's why I'm really happy that you put the spotlight on this, because it's really important. And I've witnessed it by myself, how it's it different my, you know, my well-being when I was in two different situations. So it's really part of everything, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
And actually, Dr. Shaima, if you want to zoom in on like one typical mode of transport all over the world, which is driving and using cars, drivers are very linked to certain behavior, especially when they are stuck in traffic or when they spend so many hours on the roads. And those behaviors are like road rage or being under extremely anxious states because of the long hours they spend commuting. Do you think that driving as a mode of transport is linked with negative mental health aspects? And why is that? Why are we more likely to be anxious behind the wheel? And why are we more likely to be more relaxed and calm if we are walking or cycling?
Okay, so maybe I can just speak about myself in this. I've been driving for, you know, since I finished college, so it's my main mode of transportation. But recently I relocated, so I dropped out my car and just start walking and take public transportation. And for 8 months, I was just even telling my friends, I nearly forgot the feeling of angry. And then I come back and I actually go with my car, and it took me just two hours to feel frustrated and very anxious. And then when I, you know, analyzed what happened, and I found out, okay, so you're just driving. You need to be constantly watching everything around you, like people walking, especially, of course, it depends on the country, because if you people are actually following the rules, it's going to be less stressful. But if not, and you have to watch out of everything. And now also adding to this, the economic factor of the fuel itself. So there is a lot of things that you can be happily living without it. But again, to tell people just to drop off your car and go for public transportation, there is another aspect that they need to look after as well. So, but overall, it's really a lot of stress, because actually you're responsible for the car and actually responsible for the people walking in the streets. You might hit someone by accident or something. So there is a lot of things to think about it and to be stressful, especially for my friends who doesn't like driving in the first place, but they have to. They actually don't like driving. So for them, it's just like, okay, so I'm going to work. This is the most stressful part for me, from going to, from my home to my work. So I just drove safely and reached there. So of course, walking and using public transportation, it saves time, a lot of time. You can do a lot of things during the commuting, especially if you're living far. So yeah, driving, for me, actually, I think it's the only thing that it makes me really happy. When it's just an hour, when I have nothing, I just go around by my car, listen to music. But as a commuting way, it's really stressful.
I totally agree with you, because I also experienced the same situation. I live in a car-centric city, Amman, Jordan. And whenever I travel, or whenever I have work to do, for example, in Europe or in cities that give you alternative modes of travel other than driving, it's an easy decision for me to walk or to cycle, to go around. But it's not an easy decision in cities that don't give you the options. Actually, what I find interesting, Shaima, is that whenever someone is like troubled or thinking about, you know, a decision that they need to consider, they are encouraged to take a walk, right? Like whenever I am divided and not able to decide on one thing, my mom tells me, take a walk. And I do that, especially around sunset time or around sunrise when there isn't much traffic. I take this walk, and this enables me, you know, to be connected with myself, not distracted by being too focused on the road, not distracted by being on my phone as well. And this gives me the opportunity to focus on the thing that is troubling me and being able to make a decision. So do you think that walking or cycling and being physically active is a recipe for people who are dealing with stress on a daily basis?
Yeah, definitely. And a lot of research recently confirmed that going for a walk or cycling or any physical activity definitely will reduce the level of cortisol, which is a stress hormone. So it will make you feel better. And also it boosts endorphin, which something makes you feel more relieved. So by science, definitely there an evidence for it. And also if out of this, like if you just pause for a second and imagine yourself walking in a nice place, listening to your favorite music or even listening to the nature, you will find yourself more relaxed. Even though when I use public transportation or I'm not the one who's driving, I found it a lot of beautiful places I've never seen it before. Even in the same road I've taken every day, it was like, oh my God, that's beautiful place. Oh, that sky is looking so beautiful today. So you miss all of this when you're just focusing, as you say, when just focusing on the road. You're just being like, oh my God, I just want to go safely. I don't want to hurt anyone or hurt myself. And this is what you only think about it. But when you just free yourself of these, you will find a lot of beauty that you missed, actually. Yeah, it's really beautiful. So I encourage everyone to, if they can, of course, to just do the shift.
So basically being mentally healthy doesn't necessarily mean going to see a therapist. It could like one easy walk in a nice road, in a nice environment, you know, could be the cure. So our first stop with you, Shaima, was around mental health. How do we define it? Anxiety caused by transport systems, and how can we tackle that on a daily basis in order to be mentally healthy? But my next stop with you is going to be around social connection. So being physically active is very important. There are like a certain number of steps that we need to walk on a daily basis in order to be mentally and physically healthy. This is great. We have established that. But we also need people. We need to talk to people. We need to have friends. We need to have people who are able to influence us in a positive way. So what do you think of social connection as a booster to mental well-being?
Well, social support is one of the main concepts we're looking for if we want to improve other people's mental health. And recently, when we talked with people who've been suffering from anxiety or depression, and we asked them, like, what are the things that most helpful for you? And it's either they would say, like, feeling of belonging or to have, like, a supportive community. And even most of them actually would say like walking makes them feel much, much better. But also they didn't like the big town. Like they say, we would love to go have a walk and then, you know, see people that we've already know, like saying hi, just have a chat with them. Not just everyone's focusing on his own path. So being part of the community, definitely it's one of the things that we're working on it specifically, like to, even if someone who doesn't have this community, we're trying to support him and to help him to be part of this community. So to be a social isolation, actually, it's one of the risk factors for having like, for worsening your mental health. So walking or cycling or just go outside, But again, it depends on where. Like, if you go to a big city, it will help you on a physical activity wise. If you go for like a smaller city or people that you know, it will be, you know, you will feel like you're walking around, you know, people that you know, familiar faces, all of that actually help you to feel of belonging, and that supports your mental well-being.
So basically, everything goes back to cities, right? We cannot just ask people to be physically active and to have social cohesion without giving them a city, a vessel that enables them to do so. So when we talk about, you know, green cities, when we talk about active mobility, this also will be reflected on the social connection and relationships between the community itself. And this is why I think we need to include public health professionals like yourself in the mobility decisions and in the planning decisions that we make to transform our cities to accommodate the various needs of the community. Because when we talk about social isolation, it's usually linked to, you know, elderly groups or cities that have people who live alone, for example, immigrants or nearby students, international students coming to a new city to study their master's or PhD degrees, or maybe older people that, you know, their sons and daughters left to work in another city or somewhere else, and now they are left living alone. But I think this also applies to children who only, you know, go to school and back, and they live in small apartments with no public spaces, no parks, and some of them don't even know their neighbors' kids, because they don't have a space to meet them and connect with them. So how do you see the city contributing to the unequal opportunities for people to build a good and resilient mental health?
Well, neighborhood is actually, now it's one of the determinants for mental health. So definitely when you, as you mentioned, just living in a place where there are green spaces, you can, it's safe spaces as well, definitely will affect your well-being. But the thing is, we keep telling people go take a walk or go for cycling, and we're advocating for this, but without going outside and to see the environment itself, because by the end, no one size fits all. So you have to customize a solution for the place you live in. So like that, for example, if you're telling someone to go for cycling and then you will go, there is no bike lane, or even the sidewalk is too narrow or even missing. So you cannot encourage people to go this direction, and the infrastructure itself is not that accessible, especially with also people with disabilities, because if it's not friendly accessible to them, how you will give them like equal opportunity? Because I think not only me, but most of us actually believe in there is no disabled person, there is a disabled community. Like, what you're doing as a community for those people, they can do everything if you just give them like an equal chance. So it's all about the accessibility. So if you have like a nice city, but it's not inclusive enough for everyone to go and to have, like, it's, as you say, it's just that, yeah, it's just a simple activity, just go for a walk. It's just too simple, but sometimes it's too hard for some people. So you need to consider this, not only for the accessibility, and also for safety as well. So if you're living in a neighborhood, it's not that safe. So how you expect people will just leave their children to go outside and just have a walk or something like that. So it's really important, but at the same time, it's really crucial that the city itself to be designed on a friendly basis way and to be accessible and with respect and dignity for the people who live in it. And this is something, as you said, when you work on something, you need to have all people involved, not only the technical expertise, but you have different aspects with different lenses. They will give you a really informative insight. Of course, if you just listen to the people, they will tell you exactly what they need. But as you said, you need to have a lot of people and, you know, to engage and to find like a really reliable solutions that actually make the people feel really included.
And I really like how people, you know, find always a way to, you know, change their habits. For example, a lot of people join gyms, or they do outdoor yoga and Pilates because they need this connection with their city. They need this connection with their environment. They don't want to exercise under ACs. They want to exercise and breathe clean air. And for example, in Amman, we have so many youth groups that go on walking and cycling tours every weekend at 7 a.m. when there's no traffic and when it's actually safe to be on the streets. And yeah, they spend an hour. And a lot of them say that they feel this sense of belonging to the city because, as you mentioned earlier, there are many things that they haven't noticed before because they were always, you know, trapped in their cars. But when they walk and cycle, they are able to smell the trees and be in touch with their city. And this is the amazing thing about people. They, if even when the city doesn't give them what they want, they always find a way to do it. And this is absolutely lovely. My next stop with you is going to be around the culture that we have today. I think we live in an individualistic culture. There are so many content online that we see every day that is giving us a certain perception about success. And it's necessarily linked to negative impressions. For example, being always busy, always being in traffic, owning a very luxurious and expensive car. And, you know, this is what we see among people who have so much money and who are getting prizes and awards all over the world. And this is the image that young people perceive through social media today, that this is what success means. But we know that this is not real, and this is linked to so many negative impacts on our mental well-being. So what do you think is something that we can start with to make a cultural shift and to change this narrative and to give people you know, a healthy way to perceive success that doesn't drain them and take away their energy?
Oh, that's a tough one, because it's not only a culture thing. Again, it's even if you change the culture, and it's really hard, but you need to have the infrastructure as well. But as you mentioned, like, we've seen a lot of influencers and a lot of, you know, the most successful people from the perspective of the social media. You never see them in the, like, in the public transportation. It always isolating themselves, it's either in their car, fancy cars, and so on. And this actually, for young people, this is how, what they are looking for. So if you want to change this, you need to, you know, to see people more normal. Like, you know that we keep saying, like, social media is, this is not the normal life, this is not the normal life, but actually this is what they've seen. So they need to see more activity like that. They need more encouragement. Recently, I've come across a really nice app. It's just an app. Well, like, the you know, every time you walk, you have a point, and by the end, you get give a giveaway from cafe or restaurant or something. And I remember that me and my friends were saying, "Oh, why didn't we hear about it before?" Because we walk for a long distance. So, and actually, people start, okay, so I'm gonna use this app, and I'm gonna use it for, you know, to take the giveaway. Something small like this, especially for young people, sometimes it's gonna be encouraging. But to change the culture, as I said, you need to have the infrastructure as well. And you also, you need to have, like, a role model who can just, you know, go for, like, an advocacy and go for a campaign, something like that. I'm not a social media expert, but again, all we are doing on the ground with just, you know, one trend, and it's all fall down. Like, if they just keep saying, like, go for a walk, go for clean energy, and then they would see all the nice, catchy people not doing this, they will be actually not that encouraging to do it. So it's a mix of both. So you need to have a culture, you need to have awareness to actually let people know why to do this, not just to go for a walk, but what is the benefits of this for you, for your community, and for everything. Just the awareness is number one. And I think it's the main important factors that we need to work on, just an awareness of how important it is. And also to listen to them, like, to listen to the young people, what they need, and how they see it, and then we can start from there. This is how I, maybe this is how I work, and I think it's now shifting towards, like, okay, involve the community itself in developing any solutions you can work on.
I totally agree with you. I think infrastructure is very important, because also we cannot encourage people to walk or cycle in on unsafe roads, and we need to give them a safe infrastructure and a multimodal transport system that gives them alternatives to move around in their city. And on the awareness side, I think we need to stop glorifying this unrealistic perception about success or life, that, and we need to give them a real role models, you know, who are taking care of their health, who are balancing between their work and their life, you know, by showing, you know, their human side, you know, the time they spend with their families, the time they spend at the park, maybe also when they use public transport, all the good and the bad that comes with it as well. So yeah, owning a car is not actually what it's like, because people spend so much time in those expensive cars stuck in traffic, and you know, like, and they get a lot of burden on their mental health as well. My next stop with you is going to be focused on the well-being of young people. As a young professional working on youth development, I know many young people who are advocating for a better planet and for climate action all over the world. And this advocacy and this activism could be a burden sometimes when they go to conferences and events, and when they spend, you know, like a lot of time trying to negotiate basic human rights with decision makers, and especially when they are faced with resistance or when they are faced with rejection by policymakers. So those spaces could sometimes add a huge burden and, you know, a lot of stress on young people. I've heard from you that you had an initiative at the World Youth Forum that is focusing on mental health of young people. So I'm very excited to hear more from you about this initiative.
Okay, so the World Youth Forum, we used to have this platform in Sharm el Sheikh. It's now a global platform. It's been recognized by the UN as a platform for youth voices. And recently we started to do some initiative on the ground. And as mental health, as you say, like when you talk with youth, this is the main important thing for them right now. So we decided to take this initiative to mental health support, for awareness, for mental health literacy. We've done camps. It's called inclusion camps, where we actually get to manage 100 of the youth, like from everything you can imagine, like from national schools, international schools, Egyptian, non-Egyptian, people with disabilities, of course, and all aspects you can see, people live with a mental health condition, and to bring them all in a camp and just to see how they will engage. And what actually makes me really happy about my job is before we start the camp, most of them, when we take a questionnaire and we ask them, so what are the main things that makes you really nervous? And they say that, do you want to accept me? And this was for all levels, like each one of them actually feel he won't be accepted by the other. And then by the end, they told me, okay, so we just talked. Like when we talked, we are all the same. We're similar. There's nothing to be afraid of, actually, to engage. And that's why I keep enforcing with the youth, like, engage. And, you know, if you want to erase any stigma, just engage. Like, go and engage with people. But all this misconception you have will be just near once you just, you know, to deal with them. So this is what one of the key lessons that we've learned, that you keep pushing on that and to keep listening to them, because we found that like actually they're really grown up. Like when we give them the chance to speak up, they really matured in a way that I was just surprised. And I was keep asking them, someone help you in framing this? And they say, no, just our thoughts. You told us to speak. And so they have a lot to give, but they just need more policymakers to listen to them, because actually they have a really, really good solutions. An innovative way, because this is the best thing about, you know, generation, like they are more advanced, and that's a good way. So that's my main job, and that's what I'm planning to do, just keep advocating for them and keep giving them a space to speak up and to share their voices and to know more about the real challenges, instead of just thinking or assuming that these are their challenges, because when you talk to them you find it completely different.
I absolutely love this, because also from my work, I can see that adolescents and young people find it very natural to talk to a camera, to talk to their phones, especially that many of them are content creators and they spend so much time online. But when it comes to meeting someone in person or engaging with people in real life, they second guess, they overthink. What if they reject me? What if they don't like the way I speak? What if they don't like the way I wear, the way I have my hair done? You know, so they think about a lot of things that stops them from building meaningful connections with other people. So I really like the idea of giving them spaces, you know, to help them overcome those ideas that once you talk to people, once you engage with people, you will find that you have so many things in common, more than the differences that are making you perceive one another that, oh, this person will not accept me. So I truly salute this initiative that you have led, and I hope that we can see it also in other spaces, not only in conferences and events, but also in universities, in schools, and wherever young people are. My next question is going to be around your own next stop, Shaima. What is something that you are currently working on? What is your next exciting project?
Well, actually, it's a good thing that to share. There is a platform called Mental Health Innovation Network. It's led by the school, London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, where I've studied my master. And the thing is, everyone can access, anyone who's interested in mental health, they can access it. So now I'm coordinating the work in the Middle East. So trying to spot the light on innovative solution or strategies that have been published. So I actually encourage anyone to just go and to have the HEDR profile. It's either if you're interested in mental health, you will have a lot of resources, a lot of workshop and trainings, opportunities, you find everything. And if you're a mental health professional or an NGO working on mental health, you can go and have your page. You can showcase your work, and it's completely for free, of course, because the main idea is just we're trying to engage everyone working in the field, because we have a lot of people doing an amazing things, but we are not aware of it. So it's easier we are, you know, trying to do the same thing that people have done before, because we didn't know, we was not aware of it. So we're just trying to connect those people together and to give them a platform where they can actually showcase their experiences.
We absolutely love this. I'm going to add the link to this project into the description box. So everyone who is interested in reaching out to you and collaborating could access it easily. Thank you so much, Shaima. We have spotlighted mental health and the interlinkages with transport systems in this episode. And this is very important because as a professional working in transportation, our field is not only about making the system more efficient. It's also about responding to the unique needs of the users. And this system needs to change instead of adding up to the anxiety of people and making them stressed. We need to give them a way to let go of the stress that they already bear with in their daily lives. And the answer for this is creating healthy cities. So thank you so much. We were delighted to have you with us in this episode. And to everyone watching, how do you define mental health, and how do you take care of your own mental health? Let us know in the comments. Until next time, see you.